Between the Rows podcast is brought to you by Glacier Farm Media and sponsored by FCC Ag Expert.
Hey, do you know what's new and improved? Ag Expert software.
What's that?
Ag Expert? It's field and accounting software designed for Canadian agriculture.
No, that's sparkle sound.
When I say Ag Expert?
Yeah, that.
Well, Ag Expert Field helps you manage your farm. And Ag Expert Accounting is the accounting software in Canadian agriculture. But it's so new and improved, it still has that sparkle to it.
Mm-hmm. Can I use it on my phone?
Of course. It's built for modern agriculture. Try it for free at agexpert.ca.
Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications.
Hi, and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Laura Rance. It goes without saying that we're living in unusual times, and it's not just because we're in the midst of a pandemic. Of course, the pandemic is having an effect, but after decades of relative stability, international trade in agricultural commodities has gradually become more volatile. New agreements are hard to come by, and even when they do, they're not living up to their promises. It seems that the political commitment to rules-based trading is waning. When three economists who have studied agricultural policy for decades look at today's operating environment for farmers, they've concluded that it may be time for Canada to take a different approach to farm and food policy. Not only that, but they're putting forward some ideas that some might consider radical. I recently caught up with Al Mussel, who is with AgriFood Economic Systems based in Guelph. He, along with his colleagues Doug Headley and Ted Billier, recently produced an analysis that outlines some of the risks facing Canada, as well as some of the opportunities. I started by asking Al what led up to their decision to publish this paper.
There still seems to be a real need for people to come to a realization of the point we're at and the reality of our situation. Because it's in very short order very different. Now a lot of that is you know geopolitics and trade policy. But one other aspect that we really wanted to highlight, and of course one of my colleagues was heavily involved for many years in this, was the linkage between domestic ag policy and trade policy. Mm. And you know the point that and that's Douglas Headley. That was his career at Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada, was to try and bring together, you know, to forge a domestic ag policy that would provide for, among other things, equal treatment of producers in different parts of the country and you know equity across commodities and provinces and so on, particularly with federal dollars. And you know, there's a short section he wrote in the paper in which he described, you know, the 1970s, where you had a bunch of Western grain policies, basically for Western Canada,
right.
And then you got a bunch of other things, you know, apples, horticulture, supply management for Eastern Canada. What they ran into was, you know, you couldn't, you know, the chaos of you can't dump a bunch of money into, you know, let's say wheat and barley in Western Canada. And not do it for corn in the east because people will start to arbitrage the two off and you create inequity. So they had to do that.
We ran into that with the crow benefit,
right,
and then
sure.
The crow benefit offsets, and then you know the offsets and, to the offsets.
And we were years trying to work through all these different shenanigans.
Building a cohesive strategy for domestic farm supports was a long, arduous process. But it took place against a backdrop of increasing disciplines around agricultural trade internationally. Al Mussel says the combination of the two gave the Canadian industry the confidence and the stability it needed to ramp up production and exports. The risk his team sees is that the commitment to a united front domestically may now start to unravel in the face of growing provincialism.
The clarification of what the global trade environment was going to look like got us to, first of all, the White Horse Agreement, which was initially was really just the cost shares on crop insurance,
right?
FedProv, but that was built upon, and suddenly now we can have these, you know, some people call them farm bill type programs, that offer stable funding and relative uniformity. I mean, almost not quite universal, but almost, right, in terms of how farm programs in Canada work. Well, of course, the converse is true.
Yeah.
If your global trade environment starts to go sideways and we don't have those disciplines anymore, then the worry is people start to panic.
So you could see this start to unravel now.
Exactly. That's the point. And I don't know that there is a great there's a tendency, you know, we all come into this at sort of different points in time, different points in our careers and so on. You know, so for example, you know, we forget that the WTO parameters that we use today to think about farm support or I should say really protectionism and trade policy, I guess is maybe the better way to state it, is, you know, we've got market access, we've got export promotion, we've got domestic support. Mm-hmm. That's how we think about, those are the metrics and parameters we use. But of course, those had to be built. And there's, you know, there's potentially other ways you could have looked at this, but those by themselves had to be built, right?
Right.
And now we just sort of picked them up. Well, you know, is it an obvious one? Well, how else would you do it? Of course. But once this starts to go sideways, and if people start to get concerned, and you know, I'll be quite honest, like, I can understand Western Canadian provinces starting to say, like, wow, you know, the oil complex is going down. What is our next option for economic development? You know, and well, what else we got? Well, we got forest products. We got ag and food. Okay, well, we got to make ag and food work. We got to create some jobs here. And you know what? I don't know what those guys next door are doing, right? But you know what? I don't care. I need jobs here now.
Al Mussel says that if you step back and look at the big picture with all of the moving parts, Canadian farmers are facing some turbulent times ahead. Existing business risk management programs may not be up to the challenge. A united front within Canada is needed now more than ever.
The reality is, one of my colleagues said this to me the other day, you know, at the end of the day, what we're faced with now is, you know, we don't have the rules-based, by all appearances, we're not going to have the rules. We certainly don't today, and going in the future, we're not going to have the rules-based trade environment that we've had for the last, for sure, 25 years, or even arguably going back further than that. The U.S. is going to bury us in subsidy, and the Chinese are either going to shut us out or come in and try and own us. So we've got to be able to navigate that, and how are you going to do that? It's tricky. You know, on the U.S. subsidies, Laura, like, practically speaking, when you get into a sequence of significant subsidies, because these tend to get capitalized, and just, you know, people's expectation grows. So we're now, we're now into what, year three or year four? There's, regardless of whether you have another, you know, President Trump is reelected or President Biden is elected, neither of them are free traders, really.
Right.
And secondly, as a practical matter, like, you know, you think about the problem facing Biden as a presidential candidate. He needs to be able to take some votes from President Trump in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. So if he's successful and do that, and then the first thing he does is he cuts back these farm subsidies, well, what do you think the people who just voted for him are going to think? So I don't see an easy pathway out of this. So we're going to have to reckon with this for some time. I think another very logical pushback that people would have is, like, look, you know, this president, chances are he won't be reelected based on the polls today. You know, why would we completely, you know, abandon what we've built up over the last 25 plus years over 4 months of really rough waters with, you know, this kind of off the wall approach of the Trump administration? Well, if that were true, I think I'd maybe be in agreement with it. But by all appearances, that's not what we're looking at. We're looking at more of a sea change, long-term shift.
So what does that mean for Canadian farmers who look to domestic farm support programs to backstop their dependence on international markets? While much of the focus is currently on programs like agri-stability, Al Mussel says the answer may lie in Canadian farmers collectively positioning themselves in a way that allows them to capture more value from what they produce.
We need something that's robust enough to increase our value proposition so that we don't need the check. We have the potential to do something that features our product as sustainable, both from, you know, if you will, an environmental attribute perspective, but also just from the perspective, like, you know, we can keep producing. We're a reliable supplier. We're not going away because we're not gonna run the place in the ground. And we do have surplus product on an ongoing basis to sell. You know, you can only go so far into this, and then you have to worry about other countries coming in and saying, well, okay, if you want to price high, then we're just going to undercut you either in your own market or in third markets. So you have to think about how we develop means of protecting ourselves in terms of border measures relative to sustainability.
Right. What kinds of things do we need to put in place? Is it a question of traceability? Is it a question of certification? Or, you know, what kind of changes do we have to put into place to actually be able to attach a value to that?
Probably all of those are in play. And you know, there's probably a bunch of other measures. You know, soil organic matter might be one, or at least rates of soil organic matter we're learning does not build up very fast, but you can certainly deplete it. So you might look at some metrics around things like that. Carbon footprint, greenhouse gas. I think all of these things are potentially in scope. You know, honestly, Laura, like a year ago, I would have said, like, you know, what kind of off-the-wall idea is this?
Al Mussel and his colleagues don't pretend any of this will be easy. But at the very least, they're hoping their paper marks the start of a different conversation around agricultural policy in Canada. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Laura Rance. The Western Producer, one of Canada's oldest and best-known farm publications, and one of the flagship brands within Glacier Farm Media's network of publications, has a new editor. Mike Rain was recently appointed to the role after serving several years as managing editor. Mike and I got together to talk about his new role. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Laura.
So, Mike, as a career ag journalist, let's talk a little bit about what drew you into this crazy business.
Well, I fell into it after being a journalist for a number of years. I got the opportunity through a former editor of the Western Producer, and we've had a lot of great editors. The Western Producer, I've fallen in a long line of them in the last 95 years or so. I don't know if I'm a great one, but we've had some great ones. I got the chance as times were changing, as they always do in the newspaper business. Western Producer was an early adopter of digital production, and I had some experience in that area. The company wanted to make some changes and take things digital, and I had a farm background, and the two things came together to you know, cause me to say, hey, I think I'd like to be a part of that. And I mean, I was as a kid, I was part of the Western Producer's crew of young people that were would send in their poetry and their letters and their stories. So I knew it well. It's been in my family farm's household since the 20s. So it's
you know, you mentioned being on the farm as a child, and you're still involved in a family farm operation. And I wondered, you know, if you could just explain how being involved in a family farm today influences the decisions you are making as an editor.
Well, Laura, it really does. I mean, I think I probably don't notice it because it's just part of your day-to-day existence. Just like farmers have a hard time telling when they don't see much difference between a holiday day and a spray-in day. It's just another day on the farm. So the decisions you make as an editor, what you're trying to do is just be there for the farmer, as if the farmer had unlimited amounts of time and resources to go out and get all the information that they need to be able to both live in a rural society and run a profitable farm. So that's how I approach it. What would I want to know? What things are important to me?
You know, we've seen being involved in the media. I mean, ag journalism is certainly not immune to the changes that have really transformed the mainstream media organizations within our lifetime. But, you know, so far the publications like the Western Producer have been managing to weather the storm. And I just wonder what you think that can be attributed to.
I believe that what we do is absolutely necessary to serve our reader market. It's just part of being a needed product. There's some things that don't exist without good journalists doing their jobs and serving their market. There is no way to find those stories. We've got, as like any other week at the Western Producer, I've got a bunch of stories that don't exist if we didn't do them. We make ourselves necessary.
We've been under tremendous pressure to acknowledge and adapt to the digital era. How has that changed how you operate at the Western Producer?
We've been at it. We registered producer.com in 1995, anticipating that this need would be in place by 2000 for sure. And maybe, you know, by 2005, we wouldn't have paper anymore. So we may have overshot the goal a little bit. Digital is of course, it's a 25-year emerging technology. But to that end, we haven't fully exploited what we can do for readers. We're trying to sort of balance with, we don't want to overshoot and create, put too many of our resources into just straight digital, because that doesn't always serve all of our readers' needs. Farmers do something unique with the paper. They still, and I've seen this as recently as last week. In fact, I saw this recently as Sunday at the farm. Farmers will sit down with the paper beside the computer, paper beside the phone, or phone with paper, phone beside the tablet, fold the paper up and take it in the truck with them, take it in the tractor with them. And they access both types of the media, and for different reasons. Paper has a browsability that is, it's unique to paper. Humans browse through things. If you don't know, it's one thing to do a Google search for something you know you want to know about. But what about all the information you didn't know you wanted to know about? In digital, as we keep going forward and evolving our, you know, producer.com and our other Glacier Farm Media digital products, we really want to try and, if there's magic out there, the magic will be in delivering the stuff the stumble upons. The idea is we're trying to create stumble upon information. We want to create a learning environment for readers to be able to say, hey, I didn't know about that, but I'm interested in it.
You know, these are challenging times as we know, but what do you see as the big challenges ahead for the Western Producer?
Probably the big one is that this year could be, touch wood, I'm hoping it is, could be a record harvest, and prices are okay. You know, they're not crazy high, but they're solid. The combination of those things that means that producers will have a lot of buying decisions to make, and they'll have a lot of investing decisions to make, both investing in crops, investing in the futures of their businesses. So when times are really good in agriculture, farmers go looking for more information. When times are really hard in agriculture, farmers go looking for more information. And so this fall, this winter is going to be a time of farmers really going out there and looking. And so I'll be challenged to keep enough information coming in, enough critical story mass in front of them, and be able to cover the wide diversity of things that they're going to be interested in investing in, as well as maintaining, the culture of Western Canadian rural life.
How has the pandemic affected that outlook?
Well, we've got, pandemic is in everything we do. Initially, I can remember, I think back 6 months, and I think about, well, we were concerned that, how much pandemic pandemic coverage should we do? How much is pandemic? And we don't want people to get pandemic fatigue. Readers sitting there going, everything's got pandemic in it, really? It's not a, you know, because there's always a fear as a journalist, especially as an editor, you want a balanced meal, a balanced diet of information and news for your readers. And when you do it as frequently as we do with the volume of material that we do, we didn't want it to become overwhelming. But it turns out there's pandemic and there's COVID-19 in everything we do now. And if we didn't cover it that way, it'd be like not covering precision. When we talk about precision ag, it'd be like covering that without talking about guidance. Because, hey, everybody's got guidance. We're in a post-genomic world. We're in a post-precision ag world. It's just farming now. And in some ways, we're in a post-COVID sensibility
now. It's become part of the new normal. Well, Mike, I appreciate you taking the time to talk with me today. Congratulations on your appointment.
Okay.
That was Mike Rain, the newly appointed editor of The Western Producer. This is Between the Rows. I'm Laura Rance. Our last item this week is our look at the markets. I'm joined by Bruce Burnett, Director of Weather and Markets Information for Glacier Farm Media. So Bruce, we've had some really nice hot, dry weather and starting to see some fields come off here in southern Manitoba. What's the situation across the prairies with harvest?
Well, I think the situation in Manitoba is pretty similar to that in the southern parts of Alberta and Saskatchewan as well. We're into harvest in the southern area, specifically south of the Trans-Canada Highway, with some activity in some crops north of the Trans-Canada, but most of the harvest is concentrated in the south. And we're seeing good results. Certainly the initial harvest quality has been good because of these hot, dry conditions, and the yields have been ranging essentially from good to excellent. So certainly it's starting off as a good harvest here in Western Canada. I think we have to be a bit cautious about the early start that we've seen here. We are expecting another week of really hot, dry weather. So that should help farmers make good progress south of the Trans-Canada and get those crops in the central and northern areas close to ready to harvest. So that's the good news here. I think the negative news is that we're likely going to see a change in the weather pattern by the end of August here, last week in August, where we'll move to a little bit cooler temperatures. Right now, it doesn't look like there's going to be a lot of moisture associated with that. So that is so far so good. Again, the chief areas that we're concerned about are up in the northern growing areas, where we still have, probably about a month left before we can make sure that the crop's safe from frost. So hopefully those cool temperatures don't result in widespread frost events across the north.
Are we looking at a bumper crop at this point, or is it too soon to say?
I would say that right now we're looking at certainly an above average crop, close to record maybe, depending on what crop you're talking about. So yes, we're going to see a lot of grain this year. I think the concerns right now are more in the realm of quality. And again, if we were to see an early frost as in the first week in September, up in the northern growing areas, that certainly could cut into the yield potential, especially for cereal crops up there. So again, I don't think we're quite at the stage where we can declare a bumper crop, but in terms of talking with farmers across the south, they've been very happy with the yields they've received so far in this harvest. And certainly those farmers are looking at close to bumper production, especially when you consider the drought that we had last year in some of these areas. It'll help to make up for the bushels lost last year.
Now, that's the situation here in Western Canada. I know in the U.S. we've been hearing lots about wind, and particularly something called derecho. Is that how you pronounce it? What's the difference between that and what we grew up with? I think we used to call this a plow wind when I was growing up. But what's gone on in the States? And just what's been the impact of that?
Well, yes, the storm that moved through last Monday certainly covered a good portion of the Corn Belt especially in parts of the eastern half of Iowa, all the way into western Illinois. So again, a derecho is straight line winds, plow winds. It goes under a number of names. Derecho is the latest and maybe most sexy weather term that we could put onto it. But basically, this is very high winds. I think the maximum wind reported in Iowa was around 96 miles an hour.
Wow.
With some unconfirmed 105 mile an hour winds. So, and they're sustained, so they don't just die down quickly. Of course, for the U.S. Midwest, there was lots of structured damage done to farms, you know, bins toppled over, that type of thing. But as well, the corn crop, since it's in the filling stage right now, these winds managed to go and lay down a lot of corn. So that's the biggest concern, I think, from this. Preliminary numbers out of Iowa talking about damage to 10 to 14 million acres of cropland, you know, probably about half of that, just given the mix of crops, would be corn. But again, in terms of losses to the U.S. corn crop, it's going to be very, very difficult to ascertain, because when you fold corn over like that, you can kill the plant. And in those cases, that crop would probably be harvested for forage. But on the other hand, some lodged corn can actually survive. You'll see some yield losses, but again, crop insurance wouldn't write it off. So this is now in the realm of crop insurance for these farmers in Iowa, Illinois, and, you know, parts of Minnesota, parts of Indiana as well. But certainly what it has done is it's changed the market psychology here. Whereas we were thinking that with the USDA report in August indicating record yields, that those yields could go higher. I think probably now the market's resolved that we're probably going to see lower yields in the upcoming reports as this damage is confirmed as we move through the harvest season. So that's a positive news, I think, for prices, especially providing some support to corn, which was looking at a record crop as well as very high carryout levels at the end of this marketing year.
So we won't know the answers to that until after harvest, really. It's going to be a waiting game to see just how much damage was caused then.
Yes, it is going to be a waiting game. And so that's why I'd like to caution people a little bit. For instance, this week, the corn conditions only dropped 2%, which you would say, well, the two major producing states had a big windstorm and all we could do is drop the corn condition by 2%. But really, this is going to take some time as crop gets adjusted by insurers, farmers decide what course of action they're going to take. But it certainly, I think, to me indicates that we've seen the peak estimates for production on both corn and soybeans in the Corn Belt this year, and that we're probably going to see lower estimates as we move through the reporting cycle.
Just coming back here to Western Canada and I guess North American wide, I mean, the oilseed markets seem to be unusually strong. I mean, higher than many people anticipated. What's happening there?
Well, I think, again, this is demand coming back into the oilseed market in a pretty strong way here over the past 6 months. Certainly, I think for canola, we're seeing some strength from some other areas of the world. We've had some production problems in Europe, which is going to produce about the same amount of rapeseed as they did last year. But considering last year was such a poor crop, it's no great accomplishment. As well, in the most recent USDA report, they did knock down Ukraine's rapeseed production by 1.5 million tons, which certainly will cut into the exports. And the primary export market for Ukraine is Europe. So given that Europe has become a major customer for Canadian canola over the past 18 months or so, this certainly leads the market to believe that we're going to see some further strength. At the same time, we're seeing some very strong canola oil prices in China. It appears as if we're going to be doing some more business to China, despite the fact that we still have embargoes in place on certain companies and that type of thing. But I think, again, the idea is that we're looking at some more positive structure in the world vegetable oil market, and that's certainly helping canola out here.
Well, thank you very much, Bruce. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks.
Bruce Burnett is Director of Weather and Markets Information for Glacier Farm Media's Markets Farm.
That's all we have for you on this week's Between the Rows, but we'll be back again next week. I hope you'll join us. I'm Laura Rance.
Between the Rows podcast is brought to you by Glacier Farm Media and sponsored by FCC Ag Expert, Canada's number one field and accounting software. Try it for free at agexpert.ca.
Hey, do you know what's new and improved? Ag Expert software.
What's that?
Ag Expert? It's field and accounting software designed for Canadian agriculture.
No, that's sparkle sound.
When I say Ag Expert?
Yeah, that.
Well, Ag Expert Field helps you manage your farm. And Ag Expert Accounting is the accounting software in Canadian agriculture. But it's so new and improved, it still has that sparkle to it.
Mm-hmm. Can I use it on my phone?
Of course. It's built for modern agriculture. Try it for free at agexpert.ca.